This is Talking to America. Our special guest today is Lynn Savage, reporting to us on the Olufsen case and the appeal and how it was handled by the courts. We will be giving you some information that might shock you, but also you better pay attention to it because it could dramatically affect the way you continue to be a gun owner and other aspects of your life. Lynn, welcome to Talking to America.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Then why don't we start by giving just a very brief overview of what the Olufsen case is.
The Olufsen case concerns an AR-15 type of rifle. And David Olufsen owned an AR-15 type rifle that was built by SGW Olympic Arms, probably built in the mid to early 80s. So it was 20-plus years old. And he loaned the rifle to an individual who went to a shooting range and shot approximately 800 rounds of ammunition that day. And the individual he loaned it to switched the safety selector to an unmarked position, and the gun fired a couple of rounds and then jammed. The police were called, the firearm was seized, and the end result was that Mr. Olufsen was charged with illegal transfer of a machine gun. And he went to court and was convicted by a jury, although he really never got to tell his complete side of the story. That's it in a real short Reader's Digest version. The firearm malfunctioned, and he was charged and convicted for illegal transfer of a machine gun because the firearm malfunctioned.
Okay, so he goes to court, he loses, goes to prison, and then he makes an appeal, his attorney's appeal, the decision by a Judge Cleavert in Milwaukee. And what happens with the appeal?
On May 1st, they released their decision, and they upheld his conviction. It's disturbing for several reasons, and not the least of which is that the government withheld information that proved Mr. Olufsen's innocence. And when you think of that in light of a recent decision, I think, with Senator Stevens, they threw out his conviction because the government withheld information. It's a tough pill to swallow. I guess maybe David Olufsen should have been a senator. Maybe he'd have been afforded a different set of rights in court.
Justice comes to those who can afford justice, I suppose. Let's talk about a couple things that happened which involve you. That was to remove experts from helping defense implications outside the gun case?
Yes, the appeals court upheld Judge Cleavert's decision to remove me from the courtroom. And what happened when he did that is that Olufsen's attorney, who was a public defender, who had never tried a gun case, was left to try to understand the technical testimony of the ATF without the aid of an expert. It was really strange because it was agreed upon that both experts could stay in the courtroom. And at the last minute, to quote the judge, the government reneged on the deal. Just before their expert was going to come in and testify, they changed their mind. What ended up happening was his attorneys, who would not understand how a firearm works, let alone the technical testimony being offered up by the ATF, it hamstrung the attorney. The attorney was left to try to understand this and to try to cross-examine on something he didn't understand. Let me just play what if here. What if the Olufsen case was about, say, DNA sequencing and not about guns, and the attorney was left to try to understand DNA sequencing and scientific testimony? I mean, the ACLU and every other so-called civil rights organization would be screaming up and down and talking about how unfair it is. Their silence is deafening when it comes to firearms and Mr. Olufsen's case. We haven't heard a peep out of any of them. And it's very scary, quite frankly, because if this is allowed to stand, and it is in the Seventh Circuit so far, if you're going to be denied the ability to understand what you're being accused of, I mean, why don't they just go ahead and do the next step and say, well, your attorney's got to step out of the courtroom. You're on your own, bub. I mean, because in practice, that's what they did. Olufsen was left without the counsel of an expert to try to explain this stuff to his attorney and try to help craft questions to bring out the truth from the government, and he was just denied that right. I'm surprised they just didn't go the next step, like I say, and just remove his attorneys from the courtroom. I mean, this was really, really unjust, if you will. No sense of fairness or fair play. And it should be a wake-up call, not just for gun owners, but for anybody else out there. I mean, who's going to do this next? The EPA, the FBI, the list is endless here. I mean, can you imagine trying to face the onslaught of the federal machine who's there to mow you down and put you in prison, and you're being denied, in essence, your right to counsel? Not your right to an attorney, mind you, but your right to counsel.
Well, okay, so how does this square with Department of Justice policies?
Well, it doesn't. So many things don't square with the Department of Justice policy with respect to Mr. Oleson's case. For one thing, the testing agency, the ATF, has Firearms Technology Branch. And they're the folks that do the technical evaluation, do the testimony in court. But they're not certified by any qualifying agency. Their testing methods are not validated by anyone. Quite frankly, the Department of Justice since 1997 has very clearly stated that written technical procedures must be available for analysts to review and should include, to quote, descriptions of sample preparation methods, controls, standards, and calibration procedures, as well as a discussion of precautions and, most importantly, possible sources of error. In Oleson's case, the ATF, who is now a part of Department of Justice, absolutely violated policy, and nobody's even blinking.
They had a demand by the Department of Justice in 1997?
What they had...
Basic testing, and it's been ignored all these years?
The Office of Inspector General of the Department of Justice wrote a 500-plus page document on FBI testing and some funny business that went on in several court cases. And very clearly, in their findings, they talked about the need for written procedures and standards and what they must contain, and that they must be validated by some agency. They actually very specifically talk about what's an ASCLAB lab, and that's a certifying agency that the procedures are scientific in nature, and that gathered data is recorded and examined in a scientific manner. And I can tell you from experience that that doesn't happen at Firearms Technology Branch, at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, or BATFE, if you will. The funny thing is that ATF does have a laboratory and also has a head of all their laboratories, but for some reason, Firearms Technology Branch doesn't report to it. Now, I say some reason. It's very specific as to why, because if they had written standards, they wouldn't be able to do this flim-flam that they did in Oleson's case in court.
I guess if someone would like to see an example of his gross incompetence, they could watch the actual test that was performed by an ATF agent in The Gang, the movie that that we made, the documentary film, where he went out to test the gun, but he admitted in the final end he didn't even bother to disassemble it to see what was going on internally. There's a question here you raised about dealing with the Oleson case again, about danger of court's definition of automatically, why it is self-acting or self-regulating dangerous as a definition. I'm not sure I fully understand that. Perhaps you could elaborate on it.
Well, in the Court of Appeals decision, they cited an Oxford Dictionary 1934 definition that says automatically refers to any self-acting or self-regulating mechanism. This is their new definition of a machine gun that they're putting forward. The real danger here is that also describes a semi-automatic firearm. When you squeeze the trigger on a semi-automatic firearm, it's self-acting and self-regulating. It ejects the spent cartridge, grabs a new cartridge, chambers it, and is ready to fire again. Under that definition, every semi-automatic could be considered a self-regulating or self-acting mechanism. And under that definition that they're giving for a machine gun would also encompass every single semi-automatic out there.
Okay, well, this leads us to another question then. Do you think that there's an effort by the government, with the help of the courts, to criminalize firearms ownership?
Oh, yes. Way beyond all of us. I've been involved in court cases from coast to coast, and either just as a technical advisor and been able to basically look over the shoulder and look at the case file and sometimes actively testifying in them. And there is a definite agenda afoot, if you will, to criminalize firearms ownership through the courts. And, you know, the evidence doesn't hold up with any level of common sense, and it's turning our justice system into a legal system. And surely you can understand the dangers in that.
Well, yeah, we'll become a nation of men and not a nation of laws.
That's just it. The rule of law is out the window. Never forget that everything Hitler did in Germany prior to World War II was all nice and legal. It was immoral. It was evil. But by golly, it was legal.
If you had to speculate, based on this movement by the government to criminalize all gun owners, what do you think their next move will be in the next year or two?
Well, there's a couple of things. I see them certainly going down this path of anything goes with testing. The ATF's position is if the ATF can turn it into a machine gun, then it's a machine gun. We saw that in U.S. v. Kwan out in Seattle. The government, performed machining operations on Mr. Kwan's firearm, replaced several parts, and then turned around and told the court in a straight face, well, hey, I was able to make a machine gun out of it, so therefore it's a machine gun. It's a recurring theme. I'm seeing literally from one end of this country to the other.
In fact, we have an example of that within our documentary, The Gang, showing them actually manufacturing, taking scraps of metal and creating a gun and welding it, and all of a sudden it's a machine gun. They're very good at doing this. While we're on this subject, it doesn't do much good at this point to lobby Congress, apparently, because no one there is interested, whether they be Republicans or Democrats. They really don't care anymore about the Second Amendment, from my perspective. So what should we gun owners be doing to sound the alarm?
Well, that's a good question. With Congress, with respect to firearms and the Second Amendment, the lights are on, but nobody's home. I can tell you that I have personally spoke with members of Congress and tried to push forward the Fairness in Firearms Testing Act, which has been reintroduced this session of Congress. I don't think it's got a snowball's chance of even getting out of committee. That's a good question. We need to educate some jurors. We need to turn on the lights and bang the pots and pans, if you will, because one thing for certain is if you shine the light on these folks and their methods, they really don't like it.
Good. Learn from that, yes.
And it's a matter of folks taking their citizenship not for granted and, starting to act and get off their posteriors. And if it's just a situation of being a good citizen and getting on the jury and when you hear these ridiculous things, doing what's right, if it's a matter of not only lobbying Congress, I think that it is important that we do let Congress know what's going on, no matter what. Even if they've got a deaf ear, we've got to exhaust every opportunity we have to try to change this. Because as soon as they get a real good toehold and this starts working for them, and it has been working for them, by the way, for decades, the more they're going to do it.
You know, we've been hearing about people who are upset with government spending and taxes having their teabag parties. Maybe it's time for gun owners to have some cartridge parties. Put some fired cartridges on a string or a chain and start rattling them around public buildings and make sure that we gun owners are heard. There's something you alluded to, but I think we have to pick up on it a little more. And that is that JPFO for many years has been saying that registration leads to confiscation. And what specific signs are you seeing about the government moving towards that area of registering guns?
Well, without being case-specific, I can tell you that I have firsthand knowledge that the government has been using this nation's one nationwide registration scheme. That would be the NFA and GCA, the National Firearms Act and the Gun Control Act of 1968, which says that machine guns, short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, and the like must be registered. They're all but issued a title like a car. And any time they transfer, you have to go through a great deal of paperwork. You have to pay for a $200 tax stamp, and your chief law enforcement officer has got to sign off on your application. In a recent court case I saw where they used this registry to collect up all the guns that had serial numbers prior to the firearm in question, and all of the guns with serial numbers after the gun in question, approximately 20 of them. And they seized them. They knocked on the door. They scared the living daylights out of the folks who owned them, and they said, give them up, or, you know, we're either going to seek a warrant or we're going to subpoena you to a federal district court if you don't give them up. And they took them. And they used these lawfully possessed firearms as evidence against another firearms owner. The most chilling thing to me was a remark made by an ATF agent when I was examining the evidence in this case. Is, boy, is there going to be some upset firearms owners when this is over with, because I don't think we're giving these back. I can tell you that there's another case in another part of the country where they were using the registry to just go down like a hit list and started demanding firearms and started seizing them. Now, you need to understand that NFA owners, if you will, to coin a term, are the most responsible firearms owners in this country, and that since 1934, none of them have ever been used to commit a crime except twice. And coincidentally, both of those incidences were committed by a law enforcement officer and not a private citizen. So you've got a 99.999999% good citizen rate, if you will, that these folks haven't done anything wrong, aren't involved in crime. The firearms are typically extremely expensive, which means doctors, lawyers, dentists, and professionals and people with disposable income are the purchasers and the owners of these, and they've never committed crimes with them, yet the government's using this registration to seize firearms. And it's proof positive to me that registration definitely leads to confiscation. Oh, they'll make it sound legal, and it may even be legal, but it doesn't make it right, and it doesn't make it just, and certainly doesn't make it constitutional.
How does this tie in with the Trace It Forward initiative the ATF boys have been involved in?
Oh, the Forward Trace Initiative. I think we spoke about that the last time you had me on. Well, this is really interesting. Certain firearms that are politically sensitive, misnamed by the media as assault weapons, although they're not assault weapons. Assault weapons would be full auto, and not only that, assault's a behavior, not a device, but nonetheless, the so-called black guns, the AR-15s, the FALs, firearms that the media doesn't like. The government, I guess, like the thought police, well, look, these guns might be used in a crime, so what we're going to do is just go ahead and trace them now and find out whose hands they're in and who's purchasing them. And they've been doing this secretly, if you will, for years, according to the manufacturers I've been speaking with in the industry. And that is that during these mandatory compliance inspections to verify that a federal firearms licensee holder is doing their paperwork right and keeping track of everything, they're just writing down serial numbers and where they went. And then they'll go to the next one and go to the dealer and then go to the next dealer and then find out who the last private citizen was who filled in over-the-counter 4473. The paperwork you have to fill out if you purchase a firearm through a federal firearms licensee, and gathering this information. It's certainly a violation of a right to privacy, and it's wrong. But they're developing, if you will, an ad hoc registry, which is somewhat already in place anyway. National Registry is not supposed to be lawful, but and it's not in possession of the ATF. It's in the hands of the licensees. But most folks out there probably don't know is if a licensee, that is a licensed firearms manufacturer, goes out of business, he is required to turn in all of his business records to the government. And they have that information. Every 4473, your acquisition and disposition books that show, you know, where you got a firearm and who you sold it to. If you go out of business, the government has that. And if you're in business and you get a call from the ATF, the National Tracing Center, you are mandated by law to give them the information. If they say, hey, you know, I need to do a trace on firearm XYZ, so-and-so's book says that they received firearm serial number XYZ from you. Who did you sell it to? And when? And what, you know, and if they're a dealer, please give us their license number. Although the ATF doesn't have a registry, the law mandates we keep it for them. That's only supposed to happen in the event of a crime. A firearm either recovered from a criminal or a firearm that was used in the commission of a crime, they're supposed to trace it backwards all the way to the manufacturer so that they can figure out how in the world it got in the hands of a criminal. This forward trace initiative is backwards. They start at the manufacturer and say, oh, I see you sold 30 AR-15s to, you know, Joe's Gun Shop. And then they go to Joe's Gun Shop and say, well, you know, who did you sell these to? And they either pull the 4473s or they find out what dealer he resold them to. And I guess in anticipation of a crime, even though one's not been committed.
Well, it appears then that ATF does indeed have a registry system, at least of certain guns, you know, the black guns, and they want to know who owns them. And this has been going on for quite some time now.
To a certain degree, they do. It's not all-inclusive. According to our new attorney general, I mean, he certainly wants to push this forward.
Why don't we just remind people how serious the decision in the Olufsen appeal is and what people should try to do aside from wasting their time talking to their Congress critters?
Well, I don't know that that's wasting time. We have got to just bang the pots and pans as loud as we can. You need to be active, vocal. There's been a little bit of media attention on Olufsen, and we certainly thank CNN Lou Dobbs for covering this. If it's a matter of getting vocal on the internet, if it's whatever you can do to support it, if it's a matter of helping out JPFO financially, if it's a what, certainly there's something that every person can do. Even if it's a matter of demanding a meeting with your representatives. It's one thing to pester them. It's another to say, dear Senator, I want 15 minutes of your time. I can tell you that it's going to be a lot of work, and they're going to try to toss you off to an aide, but if you continue to demand to speak with them, and you're willing to go through all that trouble to sit down with them and express your displeasure on this, they're going to take that far more serious than any fax, letter, or email. It's just one of those things. I wish I had some answers, you know, and if you can be a good citizen and be on a jury, be very aware of how evidence is being manipulated.
Okay. Well, Len, I appreciate you spending time with us today.
Oh, can I say one thing?
No. Go ahead.
Well, it's come to my attention that the boys at BATFE are certainly listeners to your program, and I would just like to say hello to them and to all the folks at ATF Chief Counsel.
Okay. We'll make sure they hear your fondest regards.
Thank you.
Len, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
We've had the pleasure of talking with Len Savage, talking about what a disaster the Olufsen appeal has become for all of us, and not just gun owners. This has been Talking to America. I've been your host, Aaron Zellman. And again, thank you to our special guest, Len Savage. And remember, if you won't defend your rights, then don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talkin' to America is a production of JPFO.org.